everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. My name is Peggy Ployer, and I am the host of this weekly broadcast put on by Sped Homeschool, as well as the founder and CEO. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with learning challenges, and I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn more about the resources and support that we offer families. Now, each month, we talk about a different topic, and this month, we're talking about school choice, and specifically today, we're going to be talking about citizenship, history, and school choice, and kind of how all of those go together. And my guest tonight is Dan Luer. And Dan, I'm just going to read a little bit of your bio, and then I'm going to have you tell our audience a little bit more about you, because you have lived an exciting life already, and I'm excited for them to get to know you. But Dan has a website called History for Humans, and he taught in the public schools and still is, I think, as a social study teacher at a Title I public school. And in 2020, he was named Hawaii's State History Teacher of the Year by Gilder Lehrman Institute of American History. And so Dan is here to talk with us about just cultivating citizenship skills through history lessons. So welcome, Dan, and I'm excited to hear what you have to share with us today.
Yeah. Hi, Peggy. Hello, everyone out there. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm excited for this conversation. It's, as Peggy said, I've been teaching for 12 years, but I was an EA and a part-time teacher. So I've been in schools for about 15 years, public schools. Mm-hmm. Teach at a rural small school, like 600 students, 7 through 12 on the Big Island of Hawaii. I grew up in New Jersey. I actually took a sabbatical like 5 years ago. Yeah, quite a change. Right outside New York City. And now I'm on like the whole island I live on is 180,000 people. So quite a difference. I took a sabbatical like 5 years ago. I drove all across the country visiting schools and collaborating with teachers, all different, you know, you're talking about school choice from religious schools, magnet schools, charter schools, private schools, public schools, autistic schools, like schools for kids who are, you know, prison to school pipelines stuff. So I've really kind of run the gamut of all different settings. And got to kind of put my foot in the waters of them, but get a little taste of what it's like in different educational settings. And this year, I'm out of the classroom this year. I still have one online class that I teach. I teach an AP US history course to online students from around the state of Hawaii. And I stepped out of the classroom. I will be going back, but I'm devoting myself to trying to build this online curriculum that we'll get into later or whatever, but it's for teachers and homeschool parents, like a video-based history curriculum. So I'm not in the classroom. I'm missing it desperately.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to put up your website here.
Oh, thank you.
History for Humans.
Yeah,
and so if you're listening to the podcast and not seeing the screen, it's spelled out history, but the four is a number four, and then humans.com. So the first question I had for you, Dan, was, just what's
So that's what I've been working on this year. I can't wait to get back to the school setting, but I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. I think we have a little bit of lag in time, so I'm going to have to make sure I wait a little while before I dive into things like I usually do. But what sparked your interest in history, specifically as it relates to civics?
So I grew up when I got to high school, I became pretty political. I kind of was like almost like an anarchist. I would like my brother kind of like molded me and like politicized me. But we were super involved with all different community things, from feeding the homeless to going to town hall meetings to going and staging protests. And it just, I was reading all the time. It kind of really like sparked when I was in high school. I kind of just like really had a fire sparked in me about making change when I was, 16, 17, 18, super empowered by that. It's like when you can you know, feel like you're making a difference when when you're young and just a teenager, it I don't know, it like can really build you up. You're not just this little insignificant teenager. And then I studied political science in college and then went back and got an education degree. And as a history teacher, I just always thought and always tried to tie together the relevancy of how studying history can empower us today to make change. I think the role of, you know, just all K through 12 education, it's not designed to get kids to be rich. And I think a lot of kids are always like, why aren't we studying how to, you know, manage our checkbooks and get a mortgage and start a business? And I try to tell my students, this was a realization I had just in the last couple of years, the goal of a humanities education, a public school education that I'm in the background of, is not just to make you rich. It's to make you live a rich life, no matter what your income is. And I think being an active citizen is just so enriching that it's a duty for particularly history teachers to impart that on them. I kind of, to get on my history nerd glasses, after the American Revolution, there was this idea of Republican motherhood that since we're not ruled by a monarch with a strong standing army that can enforce order, what is keeping the country from, you know, dissolving into chaos? And it was having citizens who would obey the law even when there wasn't someone forcing them to do so. And that the job was kind of placed upon mothers to raise good citizens, particularly boys at the time who would participate in politics. But I kind of like, now I feel like that Republican motherhood could be like Republican teacherhood or Republican home parenthood, that it's our job on small R Republican to raise good citizens who are not only knowledgeable about history, but who understand the rights and the responsibilities that go along with it.
And that's very well put. I love what you said, to live a rich life, not to get rich. And it so turns on the head of what we often will, you know, tell our kids, well, you just have to do school so you can get a job and you can succeed. But that's not fulfilling. And if that's all we're telling our kids that they're doing school for, that it's going to be rather disappointing when it comes to, you know, them getting their career and say, this is what I get. There's so much.
Exactly.
More. Agreed.
Yeah. And that there's that one Bob Marley quote that I love. Some people are so poor, all they have is money, you know, and I love sharing that to the students because it just like flips them up. You know, they haven't thought, they think of money and wealth as the only thing that makes you rich, when really, It's you know, being a part of something, having responsibilities, being connected to people and that and your community and people around you.
That's so true. Yeah. I just want to remind our viewers, we have quite a few who are watching right now, that you can be part of our conversation. We would love your questions and comments in the feed, whether you're watching on Facebook or YouTube. We will see those and hopefully be able to incorporate them into our discussion. And we are talking about history, citizenship, and also about school choice. And the reason this is all tied in together is because we have this freedom, but we have this freedom because of the way that history has gone in our country. And, you know, you talk about school choice in other countries, it's not as open as the United States. Even looking what's happened in the last 20 years within the United States and how our freedoms have changed because we have said we want more choices in education. But we have to know the history as well as to be the citizens that stand up and say, this is the choices we want. So kind of tying that all in, Dan, for parents home educating our next generation, can you tell us how historical knowledge affects that civic participation?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, like if you open any civics, you know, textbook or workbook, the first few chapters before you get into, you know, how to make change and be, you know, your rights and responsibilities, it's going to be grounded in history, going back to like, you know, the Greek and Roman states. So that is foundational. Without knowledge of your history, and particularly as American citizens, American history, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the whole story, it's the rights and responsibilities and the decisions you make as a citizen don't really make sense. And it's nearly impossible to take informed decisions when you don't have, you know, history gives us the context. And even though it's looking into the past, it's sometimes in a way looking into the future, because history doesn't repeat, but it often rhymes, as Mark Twain said. So, oh, wait, I've seen this before. It's not exactly the same, but when we tried that, that didn't work. So it is paramount to have a good, solid foundation in American history from the colonial days forward. But even like that is tied to European history, especially. And, you know, there might be issues with Eurocentrism, but that's where American history was founded upon. So there's a strategy that how many homeschool parents are using, like Google Forms is one way that you can do auto graded quizzes and tests just to make sure for multiple choice. Like you want to make sure that they understand, you know, basics, who was, you know, not just like the presidents and their parties, their achievements, but also things like, you know, how long your representatives, Congress versus Senate, how many years of their terms, the president, how often they're elected, number of, you know, 2-year terms. You want to make sure, even though memorization is not the hallmark, that's not what we want only to get to. We need to get to deeper levels of learning and critical thinking. Mm-hmm. I actually want to push back against, especially in education and teachers, there's almost like, they like turn down their noses at memorization. Oh, we don't need to memorize anything today because I can just look up who was the 13th president. Mm. I can look up when, you know, why America won the War of 1812. But I think when you actually learn things and memorize things, it grounds you. Like not knowing that Lincoln emancipated the slaves and that helped him win the Civil War. Not knowing that, it's like, I don't feel like you can share in what it means to be an American without knowing these things. And that's why there's a citizenship test to become a citizen. It's not just years of service. Oh, you've lived here for this many years without committing crimes. You have to pass a test because the history is what grounds us and connects us. And now today with being so globally connected, we need to make sure that we instill a good understanding of our history. So one thing I would encourage, you can try to get, not get those out of the way, but just to ensure a good foundational understanding before you do the deeper level, you know, project-based stuff and presentation, working on different skills to just make sure that they are mastering the content. I do like Google form quizzes, and there might be a 20 question quiz and it's auto-graded. And what I make my students do is they have to get 100% on it. And so they have a little study guide. It has like all the major questions. And I teach at a struggling Title I school. And some of the kids are like, well, we have to get 100%. Sometimes I'll say an A, you have to get a 90. And maybe, you know, if you have a struggling learner at home, maybe you only, you know, maybe you can start and you can start as a B. But just for the foundations, you know, who was the first president, you know, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the different parts, whatever it is. But I really think this can be a way to ensure a foundational understanding of history. These auto-graded quizzes, they can retake them. So, you got 3 wrong. Okay, let's look at the ones you got wrong and you can retake it tomorrow. And it's a quick quiz, you know, it's like multiple choice, quick test. It's actually one of my mentor teachers when I was in high school. He wrote a book and he kind of introduced this strategy to me and the importance of it. It's called 100%, 100 or nothing, reimagining success in the classroom. And he was my high school teacher. And he just holding that bar up for the students to master the material. And then they can retake it as many times as they need. I think that's a really powerful thing that homeschool parents could be doing. And Google is just one of many different services that have auto-graded quizzes. There's a whole bunch that you can look up. And that can just be a good foundation. And why is that important? Because, you know, when you're studying when you're thinking about current events, if it's this Build Back Better bill, you can think about how debt affected America in previous eras. You can look at how debt affected Venezuela if you're studying world history. And it's just, you need to have that historical understanding in order to take informed decisions today.
Right. Yeah. And it's just that
I can elaborate if there's more questions and more examples.
It's like that internalized, you know, just the basics that so you have something to go off of, not just your own opinion that's coming out of the blue. There's actually factual things that you're basing, our kids are basing their answers on or formulating new ideas for. So I love that. And Google Forms are easy. It takes a little bit of an instructional. I'm sure there's videos out there on how to create a Google form if you've never done it before. But there's Google for, I think homeschool teachers can get access to all that sweet stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also if I can jump in, Peggy, just something I forgot. Mm-hmm. Another reason why knowledge of history is so important is because when you study the past, like if it's world history, ancient history, Middle Ages, or even early American history, you don't take things what we have for granted when you understand how rare it is to have a country where people have rights, the freedoms that we have, and what it costs to get there. Because, recent studies suggest that what is it of millennials and Gen Z, like 50% of them don't think it's important to live in a democracy. And I really think that is from naivete on what the alternatives are and what it actually means to live in a democracy. And that has to be a foundation of history. So in order for students to be able to, there's something that comes along with that, which is you can appreciate what you have, even though there's challenges that we all have and there's still difficulties and there's still things we can improve as a country. When you look at the hardships that people have went through throughout time, much less just America, thousand years ago till today, it's really remarkable, and it can kind of open up your eyes and make you think, okay, this is something that's worth protecting, and what do we need to do in order to protect it? And it starts with having citizens who are knowledgeable, who are thoughtful, and who are putting not just their own self-interest, but thinking how can this benefit the community too, John F. Kennedy line or whatever, what you can do for your country.
That is so true. And we even see that within the homeschooling realm. I've been involved with just kind of the homeschooling movement, like right after, and I'm friends with a lot of people who were jailed for homeschooling. And now their kids are, kind of my age, and, their grandkids are now starting to homeschool. But for people starting homeschooling, they don't know those things happened unless we tell them that history. And that school choice wasn't always as free as it is in our country. But there were people that did stand in the gap and did that. So yes, throughout history, over whatever different fields of study or just freedoms that we have, to understand that, we take a lot of things for granted. And so I'm glad you did point that out, Dan. So how can families help their children transfer historical knowledge to current world events?
Yeah, so this one is going to take some creativity. You might be able to find some like lessons online and stuff, but just having a lens of, so if you're studying, I teach generally, not this year, but generally I teach world history, and we start with like ancient civilizations and ancient cultures. And just for instance, I'll give an example from my first two. We start with one of our first topics is like the ancient Chinese dynasties, and we study Confucius, right? And we study how some of his teachings and how it's influenced China over time, right? So it's good, so they take a quiz, make sure they know the basics of what Confucius and filial piety and the five relationships, da da da. But then it's like, okay, how do I get them to think more deeply about this? how do I get get history to resonate with them and show them why it's important? Mm-hmm. So the next thing I say is we look at the one child policy. So even though the one child policy is like was gotten rid of a few years ago, it's still pretty relevant, right? Yeah. And it's still a topic that relates to a lot of issues like population control and issues like food scarcity and So I basically just through the lens of how would Confucius have felt about the one child policy, right? So they're using something from the past, their foundation there. Okay. Then they have to study a new topic and we can watch some videos together and read some things together. These are high schoolers and it's kind of a heavy topic. It might not be, this might not be something you do with very young kids.
Right, exactly. Modify as needed.
but then they have to apply history to a current issue, right? And they have to, they have to wrestle with that.
Yeah.
The lockdown might be a stretch. Like how would the Confucius have thought about that? But how would Confucius, because he had a lot of beliefs about government and how government should act benevolently and not authoritarian. So you could do it through that lens. What would Confucius have thought about the Chinese Communist Party, right? Or the way they handled the lockdowns or the way they handled COVID. So you can, and you might not, it might be intimidating. And this is one of the things that it's like, ooh, I might, if I'm the parent, I might not know the answer. So I might not be able to correct, but I think this is the exploration that is going to be most valuable.
Right. Yeah.
So if you let go of the reins, like, oh, there's no answer key here. I don't know if it's right. if your child is applying history, it might not be perfect, right? And it won't be, but they're applying history to an issue today and then trying to come to an.
Yeah, well, it makes me think about how different people in one society can view the same current event. And by giving our kids the basis of why a certain segment would think a certain way based on their foundational beliefs, and then after having memorized what those foundational beliefs were, what would they think about this current event? It gives you the ability to be able to know that not always is what I'm thinking what everyone else is thinking. And to have some understanding and compassion there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and then that's to understand different perspectives, different points of view is also important as a citizen. And you can do this all throughout your curriculum on, so you study an issue and then you just, you know, you can make like, a lot of times I think people want to say there's two sides to issues, but I really think there's a lot more. How would different, you know, if you're talking about, World War II and pre-World War II and isolationism, like, oh, should we get involved and just picking something randomly? Mm-hmm. How would, you know, people in the military have viewed this? How would people with business interests with Europe have viewed this?
Right.
How would Jewish Americans have viewed this? How would, you know, whatever, Republicans or Democrats, liberals or conservatives? That way you can look at it through multiple lenses and understand there's multiple stakeholders in this issue and you get a more nuanced and complex understanding and seeing how this is. Just to go back to like ancient history, one of my first topics, we studied the caste system in ancient India. And again, that's something that's like, oh, wow, a lot of, and the thing is a lot of societies were pretty much caste-based, the feudal Europe and feudal Japan. And so we look at what is going, so the caste is illegal today in India, but we debate the question, has caste lost its grip on India? And then we look at a whole bunch of different current events. So you're just like, I think history should just be bridges. So you study something and then you look at an issue that's in the public today and you let your child explore that. Right. So there's no correct answer. All right. So we're going to look at a couple different, you know, this, and it might be contradictory and that's, history is contradictory. The world today is contradictory. So wait a minute, we read this article and it's showing that the caste system kind of is fading away because this untouchable has gotten rich. But then you read this one and you see that, you know, the majority of the Sudra caste are still living in desperate poverty, and then they have to wrestle with that. And then, and then something else from different perspectives that I think is important for history is we think the caste system is terrible, and rightly so. But then I had the kids wonder, like, why did it hold for thousands of years? And they listened to this one person who was an untouchable, who felt actually valued because the whole community needed him. That kind of almost relates to civics in a way, because he was the only person as an untouchable, even though people, you know, he can't go by the other castes, the other groups in society, and he is an outcast. Everyone needs him. When someone dies, he and his family are the only ones who can do the funeral pyres. And he kind of held his chin up there. And then it just gives students like, oh, wow, okay, so that's another way to see this issue.
Right.
And the more nuance we can put into our students and our children on complex issues, because things are, you know, when I always tell students, like, when nothing is black and white, you know, it's not history is not Hollywood, current events are not Hollywood.
Exactly.
When evil comes, it is not going to, they're not going to call themselves the Dark Lord and wear a dark cloak and have ominous music playing behind them.
Right.
They're going to be, you know, figures like Hitler were beloved. Why did the citizenry, you know, so many of them get swept up in this believing he's a savior? So that's the more nuance we can build into students when we're studying history, seeing from different perspectives, trying to understand the reasonings behind things. They can be more thoughtful citizens.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's not just about the grades. So I have to come at you as a homeschool mom, because I know a lot of probably moms are asking this question in the back of their head, or dads. We have quite a few dads that are in our community. But how do you grade when there's no right answer? You know, what do you base your final grade? Because some of them have to create report cards in their states, or especially in high school, transcript. What do you, you know, base your grading on with your students?
So I think that's why it's good to have those memorization. And I would say not just memorization, but understanding. Like, when you memorize it, you develop an understanding of it. It's not just like rote memory, but come to an understanding. So that's why you have those as like a bank to build off of. But then for the more, sometimes I have like a little bit of like participation points in terms of like, okay, you've been putting in effort, you've been really trying here, you've been, because those are also skills that you're trying to develop, right?
And, right, yeah.
And trait, so in the classroom as a teacher, you want students, some students are, you know, the school I teach at, there's kids who read at a third grade level in my class, and there's kids that read at a college level. Mm-hmm. They're on uneven playing fields. And as a teacher, I'm supposed to be supporting both. So if the one who's has all the skills isn't applying them, then, you know, and this other one, he's struggling to make the mark, but he's developing the traits and the characteristics and the skills to be successful, then there, I think there has to be some kind of padding there, not just participation trophies for just, oh, you showed up, but you worked for it, you know? And, but for like a project, maybe they're writing an essay here. There's no right answer, right? Is the caste system fading away? How would Confucius have felt about this? What would Andrew Jackson have thought about the Federal Reserve? No right or wrong answer. But what you do is you build a rubric that has used evidence. You know, maybe you quantify it. You know, you've used at least, you know, five pieces of evidence and explained it to make a connection between the past and the present. Maybe it's the number of sources you've used. So you've used multiple sources, or at least three current events to apply to what we've studied in class. So that you could quantify things like that. Another thing is just for me, I'm always working on, if it's a written thing, I'm always working on one piece of writing at a time. So it's maybe it's you use transition sentences, you use you analyzed quotes within your paper. So you should build a rubric that rewards not just you know, it's historically, it should be being applied to history. So you used certain, you know, like the historical facts you've used were valid and accurate and relevant. So that should be there. But then you just build a rubric based on what skills you're looking for. if it's a if they're doing a presentation to their brothers or sisters or their other homeschool group, you know, how well did they speak? How well was their eye contact? And you're grading on that. And then the quality of their argument just based on logic or reasoning. So I think that's what you want to be measuring in that perspective.
And I want to encourage all you parents out there that there are,
or if it's like something, a product they built or a multimedia presentation, you would be measuring, you know, the professionalism, the, the, what, there's a key word that we use as teachers, pride of ownership, that you actually put forth effort in making it and not just winging it.
Right. There's so many other things other than right or wrong answers that you can grade on. And so it's so important to remind parents of that.
It can sometimes be daunting and some of the rubrics that some teachers use.
So can we talk about specifically what parents can do at home?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I apologize. It's, I'm catching bits and then there seems to be a little delay.
Oh, I was going to say specifically at home, you know, we have these freedoms where we can go visit historical sites. We can go to a lot of different places. How can we take advantage of those when teaching history and citizenship to really ingrain these concepts into our kids?
Yeah. So I think that's the big picture item, right? How do you apply these? You know, you can do little projects, like I said, and tie the history to now. There's a resource that I can share that has a lot of good, they build historical thinking skills. It's just called Chegg. If you type Chegg in online, they have great, they build historical thinking skills, and it's from Stanford University. They have lots of free resources for parents to use. It's grounded in history, but it gets students to be able to develop historical literacy, thinking like a historian. It scaffolds the skills. So they have stuff that's for like elementary and they have stuff for high school kids. But I really encourage there's so many different activities that parents could be doing. Instead, though, a lot of teachers, they like to do a letter to the politician. I think if you're a homeschool parent and maybe you're in a homeschool group, you can go on a field trip to when they're doing a town hall, even especially now with Zoom town halls. So that could be a project that they're participating in civics with. And maybe it's tied to something in history that you've been studying. So getting in contact with politicians, I think, is super, super important. Your local representatives, think local. What is it? Think global, act local. I really think until we're adults, we should be thinking local and acting local. The more we can get involved in our local communities, the more we, do they know their local politicians? You know, I think even by middle school, to have your students know how the county council works, contacting them, writing letters to them, and you can do projects. What's great is you can do projects. What does your kid love? Do they love skateboarding? Okay. Well, then maybe they can do a campaign for like a skate park in town. Right. Do they love the environment? Do they want to make sure that there's more, recycling bins, even though recycling, we know a lot of the recycling isn't actually environmentally quite so sound as we were led to believe. But that might be, but to do an educational project about how to actually reduce and reuse rather than recycle. But going to actually just like participating in those local issues. They are like, I'm by the ocean. So we do lots of we've done beach cleanups and service learning projects with our kids. So for 1 year we did there's a beautiful beach and valley right by our school. This was more tied to science, but I can't remember exactly how I tied it into history, but it was just more like a civil service learning project for my class where we did beach cleanups. We studied the water in, because a lot of it, there was a lot of pollutants that were coming from upstream. So we studied that, the fertilizers. So just, I think you can work with the passions of your kid, figure out what it is, and then what, how could they get involved locally on that issue? They can look at recent bills. You can study, you know, what resolutions are up for a vote. That's super important. And, you know, maybe they organize something, raise money for something. But I think there's a saying like, you can't read about pushups, right?
Exactly.
So you can't, like, reading about pushups is not going to get you in shape. Reading about how to run a marathon is not going to get you in shape. You actually have to do the work. So while studying history is important, and it's like the foundation, it's the groundwork, what you actually then need to do is actually get involved. And like, it is so empowering as to get kids involved and not, you know, I'm a little weary when students who are in middle school are, or elementary school or even high school are, you know, we don't want to activate them, and we don't want to, I fear there's a lot of teachers out there, and I'm sure that's maybe why there's, you know, some of your audience decided to homeschool, because teachers are generally, you know, most of them are, especially where I'm from, most of them are pretty liberal, and some of them are very radical. And then they kind of not just indoctrinate, but activate. So they make kids take action that they're basically is on issues that the teacher is passionate about. And then they use them to get them to take action. And the kids can get into it, and it can spark passion. So there is, you know, maybe something there. But that's why I think when it's not the national politics that is so contentious, and when it's local, not to say you can't do anything at the national level and write about, write to your senator or write to your governor, or sorry, that would be state level. But I'm thinking more just township when you're young.
Right. Yeah.
But so I'm a little weary of like activating kids, but more getting them experience in how to, you know, make change that is important. So if we know that there's one area in town where there people keep speeding and we need a traffic light there, or we need a crosswalk there, that's something that kids, you know, when you're in middle school, you can actually affect change on that. You know, there's to save a park, to plant more trees, to do a beautification project, to, you know, clean up an old area that's like kind of crumbling, build a playground in this part of town. These are things that kids can become involved in. And when they can do that, they can realize how to take larger actions later. So I think one thing is just get involved in civil projects and service learning projects. And how do you grade these? You can imagine, you know, tie it for whatever their interest, you can kind of do this thematically. So imagine they're into community gardening. Okay. You can tie this to victory gardens during the World Wars, right? So they study how victory gardens were during World War I, World War II. And then they apply it and build connections, you know, and maybe they make a plaque if they're interested in parks. So like they want to conserve land or improve a park in town, make it more child friendly or get some skating things in there. Sorry, I'm a skater. Like I was a skater, because I keep referencing when I was young. But then you can study the CCC during the New Deal and some of the public work projects on how they were involved and make connections there, bridge gaps there. So whatever the issue is, you know, turn it into a research project. Okay, let's look in history how this was, you know, where's a root in history that we can latch onto, study that, and then that could be a grade. And then that makes history, you know, come alive. It gives them a reason to study it. It sees the relevancy right in front of them. And it's something that they're not going to forget. You know, they're going to have an emotional detachment to it. And that is the gold of teaching, you know, and you can't do that for every project. So maybe you can't be doing that every week. Like, oh, we're going to, you know, plant the town garden. But that might be something you do once a year. It might be something twice a year. But those things can really, they pay dividends later, right?
Yes.
So that takes some backward mapping, you know, and planning out how you're going to do that. And if you just typed in, there's lots of resources for service learning projects or PBL, which is just project-based learning. But I really think the next level, instead of just project-based learning, where they might make a multimedia presentation, make a, you know, give a TEDx talk kind of thing. Instead of that, tie it to service. Tie it to, you know, raising awareness about a health issue, being, you know, whatever it is, you know. So if it's about health issues, maybe, you know, study how when the foundations of Coca-Cola in the 1920s with Prohibition and stuff. So you can always, I think, find something to attach it to in history, have your student, you know, every child do some research on it. And like I said, just kind of try to bridge that gap, you know?
And I remember having a guest on a while ago, and they brought up the concept of how when we have a relationship with something and it brings in other people, that learning sticks more than anything else that we will ever study or learn, because we are relational people. And so we learn best through sharing stories and being involved in each other's lives. And so it's very important that you bring learning out of the books and into these places like Dan's talking about. I just love that.
Here's a few quick things that you should be doing with history to build civic skills and citizenship skills. Do profiles in Courage. To, again, I'm quoting JFK. I don't know why he's on my mind. But do when you're doing biographies of different people from, you know, Rosa Parks, George Washington, Susan B. Anthony, have them study, because when you're studying people, Malala Yousafzai, whoever it is, you can see how a human impacted change, right? And I think doing, you could do visual illustrated timelines of them, but I think a lot of people try to focus on their achievements. Oh, what did Frederick Douglass achieve? What did Abraham Lincoln achieve? But what I think is also equally important for our young ones is, what difficulties did they face?
So
what obstacles did they surmount, and how? And because you know, when you're, if you're actually trying to affect change on anything that's going to be, you know, substantial and important, even if it's something like, I want to build a, you know, we want to do a crosswalk here. Right. I want to even, you know, there's like those little flags so that when you're crossing the neon flags, even doing that, you're going to have to deal with bureaucracy. You're going to have to deal with frustrations. So learning how others, because I do think hero stories are important, because it gives us something to look up to inspire us. We've seen, we know somebody has struggled through something in order to achieve, right? And it makes, it empowers you to be able to do that. So I really think when you're studying, history is a story, and it's so important that it's not just, so maybe I'm pushing it back against myself. It's not just, you know, when you're after you're making sure they're understanding key things, you also want to make sure they, you're getting a human story in there. So always try to think, who are a couple people who can be inspiring my child in this unit, you know? And there might be some very unlikely ones that that you can find. And then, you know, just reading up about them, and then you could turn that into like a little mini research project. What difficulties do they have? What, how did they overcome them? And, oh, I have a project I can share, and maybe your, you know, your audience can just download it for free. It's for like high school. You could do it in middle school too. It's called the Be the Change Project, where they study a figure in world history. You could adapt it to American history. I make one rule, because it is world history and they're going to get a lot of American history. No American figures, I say. It has to be world. So you could just change it if it's a U.S. history class. And they have to study that person. What difficulties? So, you know, quick bio. What is their legacy? Like kind of an introduction. And then what challenges did they go through in life? And how were they able to overcome them? And then what were they able to achieve? And then the last part is, and this is the key thing, what has this person inspired you to do? Or what can you, how can you follow this person's example in order to make a change on an issue you care about? And I just get such beautiful essays from my students every year. And then they form like discussion groups and they share with one another. And it can be really inspiring to hear these, you know, these people, oh, Gandhi, you know, oh, he got a British independent, you know, independence from Britain against this huge empire. But then when you hear the difficulties or Martin Luther King, you know, his moments of doubt and his darkest hours and how, you know, he, you know, the government conspiring against him and different civil rights groups turning on him and stuff. It can really, I think, make our kids feel like they, you know, difficulty is part of the, it will be in the, it's in the cards of being a citizen, trying to affect change and being a productive person in your community and in life. Right.
And
so I can share that with you and then your audience can download that.
Yeah. Well, it's so good because, we have kids that struggle, and they think that they're the only one, that's out there struggling and yet they aren't. And we all go through struggles, but what do we do when we're in the struggle? And seeing how other people have done that is so important. Just to know that's a normal part of life. It's not just something that we alone are experiencing and the world's against us. And, but yet overcoming is when we get noticed and when we make change. It's not when we let those things just take over and just knock us down and we stay there. So Creative Minds Homeschooling says the best history lessons I learned was talking to someone who survived the concentration camps. Again, it's back to that relationship aspect.
Yeah. And then I know we're kind of running a little low on time, I can share like one other thing that they could do, which I think is important for a lot of, I know definitely in the teaching profession, and I'm sure some of that like leaks because that's based on state standards and stuff goes to you homeschool teachers as well. Homeschool parents is argumentative writing. And in history, a lot of history teachers love just like, oh, you know, like, should they have passed the Second New Deal? Like if you're studying the Great Depression or you tie it to a current event, like should the Build Back Better bill be passed? Just to pick something very, and then it's just like yes or no, right? And then you grade them based on using evidence and then explaining the evidence and, you know, having good thesis. And that's okay. But I really think the next level that actually builds better citizenship skills for our students and also just builds better kind of entrepreneurial skills as well that can be transferred is how do we get different groups to come to a solution on this issue? So a project I just did before winter break with my AP students, and this is something I can share too that your audience can just download and check out, is so a contentious issue at least a couple of years ago, it's kind of faded a little bit now, was the Confederate monuments, right? And a lot of teachers would just do, should we remove the Confederate monuments or not, right? And then the kids debate, and that's good, right? They need to learn how to use evidence and make arguments and informed opinions. That's great. But I think something that's, if you take it a little further, is how can we get the different groups, what is a solution on this? How do we get the different groups in our town? So maybe you live in a town, a southern town, and there's even some monuments in northern towns as well. To what would be a reasonable solution that could reflect our values and make everyone happy here? So I had my students, they studied 11 primary sources from the past. Then they also watched a couple current event clips on what was happening. So in Hawaii, there's no Confederate monuments. We're a little estranged from that. So I put them as I gave them the scenario. You are on the Richmond, we pretended we were in Richmond, Virginia, and you are on the Richmond Monument Executive Committee. And all of a sudden it's like, ooh, I'm on the executive committee. And I get to, so they're in a group of people, a group of students. And that's empowering. Like, oh, I feel, so I think when you make scenarios, like you are this for this project, that can be really cool. And then they had to, you know, study those. And then they had to come to a solution. They had to, how does this, you know, how do the pro-monument people feel and why do they feel that way? How are the people who want to tear them all down? How do they feel? And what could be a reasonable solution? And then they had to make a video presentation And then they had to comment on each other's. But I think that is so much more. And even though it's, you know, hard to actually get, you know, there's a lot more dirtiness that would come, you know, political contention that would get in the way if they tried to enact that solution. But at least they're thinking, how do we actually bridge the gap? It's great to say they should come down or shouldn't, but it's the work of citizens today. I think the number one threat, and I think we all kind of know this, in America is not another country, but us tearing, not being able to listen to each other, us not being able to talk, you know, even at Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner, like, oh, don't talk about politics because it's going to erupt in it. And just imagine not your family, and but people who, you know, live on the other side of town who feel differently, you know, than you and went to a different school, is getting our kids to try to work on solutions that can satisfy, right? Because America has been a nation of compromise from the Constitution, the North and the South, and you know, merchants and farmers all trying to work together. So how do we instill this skill of coming up with reasonable solutions that are reflecting our values, but also can satisfy, that we can live with together. So the projects, this was the first year I did it. It turned out great. So if there's if there's an issue in your community that's being debated, that you can tie to history and then have your child come up with some kind of what could actually work, you know, and then they can base it, if you can find some historical things to base it in. But if not, it's just still a skill on an issue today that they're coming to a solution on. So solutions-based activities, anytime you can do that, I think it would be great for our kids.
Yeah. And I know Dan has shared a lot of resources, and he's already shared a lot of those links with me. I'll make sure that they get into the YouTube feed after the show so that you can go on and just click on those instead of us putting them up on the screen and you trying to scramble and write them down or pause the screen and get those written down. So we'll make sure that we get you those resources, because Dan has a lot of great stuff, and I want to make sure that you are able to access that. So Dan, as we are closing out our time, I would just love for you to talk a little bit about your website, History for Humans, and just what parents may be able to find on your website.
Sure. And I just want to give kudos to your audience member who shared about the concentration camp, the story. I brought in a virtual guest. Like, you know, there are some silver linings with COVID and how it's transforming education. And he gave a virtual talk about surviving the concentration camps. So, and all of my students at the end of the year reflection. And I thought it was going to be a little boring for the kids because he didn't really have a video and he didn't have much multimedia. And he was just going to, he's like, I'm just going to speak about my experiences. And I have some pictures and I'll show, but for like 50 minutes, I'm just going to, and I'm like, wow, my students, you know, ninth graders, I don't know how they're going to handle just somebody speaking. And while they're at home, most of them, you know, just looking at their screens, so many of them said that was the most powerful lesson all year. To which I thought, I'm like, oh man, what about all the crazy activities I did? But a story can be super, 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 you know, resonates because you put yourself in their shoes. And you might be able to just throw one more thing before my website. If there's like a local change agent in your town or like a local politician who's inspiring, telling their story on how they got involved. And with Zoom, it's easier than ever. You know, they might be able to come in for 15 or 20 minutes, but that could resonate, you know, like you never know how one person's individual story can make it a change, you know, more than reading in the book, it becomes more real. But so my website, historyforhumans.com, I left the classroom this is my first year not in the classroom in about 12 years, but longer. I was doing EA stuff before that. And I realized after COVID hit, I wanted, and so many teachers were scrambling, looking for like lessons and how do I teach my kids and what's like distance learning. So I started to create story-based curriculum. So I'm really big into stories. I think stories are what help us make sense of the world. So I have a high school curriculum that's post-Civil War. So starting with the industrialization to the civil rights movement, and I'll be making some more later, but I put that on pause. All different, and there's full lesson plans that go with the videos. So there's like 12-minute YouTube videos. Those are free. You can just watch them online. But then there's lesson plans that go with them. There's a quick interactive note sheet. There's a Google Form quiz, so it's auto-graded. You can make sure they get 100%. And then there's a critical thinking activity that goes alongside it. Maybe they're reading primary sources. Maybe they're designing a logo for like a civil rights organization. All of them are varied to keep students engaged in different skills and not getting like, you know, bored doing the same thing over and over. And then lastly, I started to build like an upper elementary curriculum, and I have about seven episodes and seven lessons for like maybe 10 to 12 year olds. And some middle school would be good for it too. So I have some Civil War, and now I did a Trail of Tears, and now I'm doing Alamo and Texas Independence right now. I'm editing it. So lots of good history stuff with full lesson plans so that you don't have to scramble and still find a whole bunch of things to do that you can download.
Right.
So I think it's powerful for our kids to have story-based education.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So as we're kind of wrapping up, I just want to thank you, Dan, for all that you shared. I'm trying to block a user, but it's not working right now. So we'll take care of that in a minute. But just thank you for all that that you shared. And I hope it has spurred a lot of you as parents, just to know that there is so much that you can do to cross over lessons. I think we feel like we're only covering one subject at a time, and that that we can't teach civics and history, or we can't, you know, teach cooking and history, and there's so much crossover, especially with history. So definitely be mindful that you can be teaching a lot of things at the same time. So thanks again, Dan, just for sharing your wisdom. I encourage you to check out Dan's website again at History for Humans. And I want to thank our audience just for joining us in this conversation. This is just one of the many resources we have at Sped Homeschool. So I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com, as well as our secondary website, which is empoweredhomeschool.org. And I just added up a couple audiobooks now that we're selling on there. So some different things that our partners are putting up on that marketplace as well. And we're going to continue this conversation about school choice into next week, as we talk about how school choice is your parental right. And so we're going to talk about parental rights with Dr. Rebecca Spencer, who is a return guest, and talking on a whole different subject. I think the last time I had her on, we talked about dyslexia. So she has a lot of great information to share. And I just want to thank you, Dan, for reaching out and connecting with us at Sped Homeschool and telling us about your resources, because this was a very inspiring hour, and just thank you for all that you do and all that you do for students and teachers and homeschool parents alike.
Yeah, well, thanks, Peggy. I appreciate you having me, and it was a great conversation. And if anyone at home has any questions or wants to reach out, and I love talking teaching, I love talking history, so don't hesitate to reach out on my email or any of my other social media stuff. So take good care, guys. Keep up the good work.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, and thank you, everybody. And we will see you next week right here at the same time and same place. And so until then, have a great week, and we'll see you then. Bye, everyone.